guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Right back to your phones, as promised. Tommy.
Hi, Felger. Listen, speaking of you guys on Sundays, especially with the football show, you have Brett for you. How confident are you in his sources?
Brett, pretty good.
Okay, did you read the tweet today on your website on NBC Sports?
About yes.
That a couple of teams are looking at going to make offers to the Patriots on Gronkowski?
Yes, that is correct.
All right, I don't know what you think of that. Maz, I agree with you. I'm sick of hearing it. And to Mike, I'm sick of hearing about Gronkowski when it rests or whatever. Put up or shut up.
Okay. Is it reaching that point that fans feel for Gronk, put up or shut up?
I felt that way a long time ago. I think someone said that yesterday, too. So this is now a couple of fans in a couple of days. But the thing that complicates it is Brady. It's not Gronk. It's Brady. If this were Gronk alone and Brady would just be in the Brady of other years where he takes whatever the team does and keeps his mouth shut, whether it's Mankins or Will Fork or whoever else, then that's one thing. But in this case, if you trade Gronk and you lose Brady, well, then you can't trade Gronk. The question is whether you think Brady's like serious about walking.
I don't. He can't.
It feels like he's too indebted to the owner.
Can't happen. He would not do that. He is too indebted to the owner. He's too indebted to his commitment and what he planned and what he said. Can't do it. Burt Breer tweeted yesterday that last week we mentioned this in the game plan podcast. I don't even know what the hell that is. We mentioned this last week, and I'll repeat it. My expectation is the Patriots will be getting trade calls on tight end Rob Gronkowski. In fact, a couple of teams told me in Orlando at the owners' meetings that they were planning on making them. Greg Bedard has said that as long as Rob Gronkowski remains uncommittal, and the longer he remains uncommittal, it would not surprise him one bit if Bill Belichick acted on those trade offers. So, here's Anthony in Medford. Your thoughts, Anthony.
Hey, what's up, Mike? Now, Gronkowski, I'm getting a little irritated, so I'm sure Bill is. But all you got to do is put up with him, Mike, because if you trade Gronk, you're not going to get fair value in return, especially with Brady for only two more years. That ain't going to help us win another Super Bowl in two more years, because you're not going to get close to fair value, especially all this crap of him retiring this. But the key, I think, to all this is Kraft. Because he's the boss over Brady and Belichick and Gronk. He puts them all in the room and says, nobody leaves till this crap straightened out somewhat.
Let's see. I don't know. Put them all in the room and say, cut the crap. But Brady still doesn't get Guerrero. And Gronkowski still doesn't get a raise. And Bill still has to sit with the thing of being undermined by the owner. I don't know. I just don't. They've already come together in the room. It doesn't feel like they solved anything. They've spoken, according to Kraft. Does it feel like anything's been resolved?
No.
Feels as bad as ever. Feels as bad as ever, but I agree with his first statement. They can't trade Gronk. They just can't. Kraft couldn't stomach the PR hit. It's bad enough that they've got to listen to, you know, they're a borderline laughingstock for what they traded Garoppolo for, and you know how that hits the Krafts, that they mismanaged an asset like that. That cuts deeper with them than almost losing on the field that they did a bad business deal. Oh God, I think Jonathan feels about having to hear that they did a bad business deal.
But then why did they allow it?
So then they're going to do it again? Then they're going to do it again with Gronkowski and trade him for a second or third round pick, which is what they say the ask is going to be? No shot. No shot. Or even a low first. They're not going to do it.
No, I don't think they're going to move Gronk either. But again, I think...
Why did they do it, Maz? They made a mistake. They lost their nerve. That's why. They didn't mean to. They just...
Do you think there's any chance that Bill traded Garoppolo and then told them after the fact?
Yes.
No. Robert told Peter King. Bill called me and told me what he had, and I was taken aback, and I called Jonathan.
Right, so my question is, though, did he tell him after he already made the deal, said, yep, here it is, they filed the papers, and said, oh, by the way, I just traded Garoppolo.
I don't believe that.
Do you think that Robert Kraft felt like Bill at that time had done his due diligence and called around other teams? And
no, because so, Robert was taken aback. Robert knew it was a crappy deal.
Yeah.
Robert knew it was a crappy deal. But the alternative was to piss off Brady. So they don't trade Garoppolo, and Brady says he's still here?
So this gets back to the whole power play with Belichick and Brady, right?
Yes.
Fine, you want me to trade him? Fine, I just traded him for a second. Oh, you don't want me to do that? Oh, because why? Because you'll upset Tom? Too bad, he's gone.
Chet in Millbrae has a Red Sox thought. Hi, Chet.
Hey, this is Chet. So my take on this is, who made the commitment to Martinez? If it was Cora...
It's not.
Okay, so now is Cora really in charge of the team then?
He's not.
And is Dombrowski actually putting Cora in a place where he can succeed? My take is Mookie Betts on the bench is not your best team.
How could it possibly be? But you know what they would say is it's about 162 and not one night.
Like, right, you get a day off tomorrow.
Like, no, but I mean, I'm just giving you their side of it. They would say, of course, we might be a little bit weaker tonight, but you match for 162 and everyone gets their blown. We need to work in JD and we got to get Jackie going and Mookie hasn't sat yet, so it's his turn, and like that's how they would justify it. But the first thing, does Alex run the team? No. And I think a lot of teams are like this now. It's the front office, it's the stat nerds, it's the GM. And the manager is really just a button pusher who makes sure that the smoke machine works in the clubhouse after they win and everyone's happy. Like, that's sort of the new model, is it? Because don't tell me this bozo in New York knows exactly what he's doing. Poor Gabe Kapler the other day came into the game and tried to bring in a pitcher that wasn't even up. So, like, the whole thing, I think it's insane. I think it's bad. Like, I don't like it. I miss the strong manager. Like, it's my way or the highway, and the guy actually manages the game, a manager. Not just a babysitter who lets all the, you know, stat nerds make the calls, but it feels like that's what it is. And on Martinez, this is not Alex Cora's call. Dombrowski promised Martinez time in the outfield, and so they're giving it to him.
Well, and on top of it all, with all these days off, I don't know, is Tony La Russa's voice somewhere in there if you want to add that one in?
Has to be.
Is Cora consulting La Russa and said, hey, by the way, take a look at the first week of the schedule. What do you think? I'm thinking of rotating guys in and out here. Is that a good idea? What did you find in the first week of the season? I don't know. I mean, like, I mean,
but what about guys heating up, you know, and continuity? You know, like Mookie Betts went 2-for-5 last night, hit a home run. They finally saw, you saw some pop in that lineup. Sit your ass down.
He's sitting, and Jackie Bradley, who's 1-for-12, is in the lineup.
It's so stupid.
And the single that Betts hit earlier in the game was smoked, too. That was a rope.
We've got Michael in Rhode Island on the Sox. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, the resting is highly overrated this time of year. But, guys, I got to strongly disagree with you. As an old catcher, if you look at the pitch sequence, Joe Kelly, that last at-bat in Tampa, and you guys were all over him. The pitch before, man, this lefty ripped it.
Foot
foul.
He did.
And that was the perfect pitch. And I got to tell you something. It goes, the whole catcher, the ball's to throw one in the dirt with the guy on third, and Vasquez is going to come up with it. I think it's a great pitch.
Okay, Yogi Berra on line three there. I give Joe Kelly credit for that off-speed pitch.
I don't.
I do.
I mean, if you can give him credit for the decision to throw it. That's fine. Where he put it? The fact that the guy swung at
it in the dirt.
He put it in the dirt at the guy's foot. It wasn't over the plate. It almost hit him, for crying out loud. It was a horrendous pitch.
If the Celtics have only one bullet, the Celtics have only one bullet left in the chamber. You want it on Kawhi Leonard, Josh in Connecticut. Go ahead.
All right, so I think that they should use Brown smart, like start as a sign-in trade kind of thing. Like you guys mentioned the Chris Paul thing earlier. I think that would be a perfect thing. Throw in the Nets pick, and you're going to have to release some money somehow. So you'd probably throw in Horford for it. And then the big man, like they don't like big men because the whole position was basketball. But if you use, like you guys talked about Nerlens Noel a little while ago. He's the perfect guy. Low stock, no stock, actually. You throw him in there. You just need a big guy to rebound and play defense. That's all the Celtics really need.
Okay, thanks. So can you make hide nor hair of what he said? Because this is the problem when Jimmy opens up his trade machine. You get 14,000 different names, and like, could anyone keep track of that?
You're welcome. Not really.
So just keep it simple. Do you want Kawhi Leonard or not? If they can add one more piece and Kawhi Leonard's it, how do you feel about it? And then do all that other stuff on your own time. Because then we get calls like that, and your head's spinning. It's
like, I love calls like that.
I can't understand a single thing this guy's saying, and it's too much.
I don't love it. If it's only one bullet, I want to shoot it at Anthony Davis. That's what I want. I want Anthony Davis.
Okay. A Bruins minute. Big one tonight in Tampa. Give you some Bruins thoughts on what I think the Bruins should do with Brad Marchand. I'm not the first one that came up with this idea, but I do want to co-sign.
You're going to steal it.
I'm going to steal an idea on Brad Marchand. That's next.
Tugger and Mez. The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Nash wins the draw. Puck goes to the end boards. Crashing in is Kunitz and Holden. And the horn will sound. The tempers are still flaring. But when you look at the standings tomorrow, the team at the top of the Eastern Conference, the top of the Atlantic Division, will read Boston Bruins. And listen to the crowd here at TD Garden. Salute the effort from the boys in black and gold. Your final here. Bruins 4 and the Lightning 2. The Bruins have won all three meetings against the Lightning this year.
Bruins beat Tampa last week to take first place in the division. They remain there tonight as they head into the rematch in Tampa. Bruins own this team. They really do. They've, as you just heard, won all three this year. They've won seven of their last eight versus Tampa. Charlie McAvoy is back. They're fully loaded except for Rick Nash, who is back skating in Boston.
Good sign.
Huge sign. Huge. And even if Nash is another week or two away, he's starting on the way back, which is huge. Because I still think he's very important to this team. All right. Bruins are in either way. The playoffs, I mean. They're going to be home to start the playoffs. Either way, probably a week from Thursday would be game one, would be my guess. Whether that is Toronto in the first round or New Jersey in the first round, you should win both. You should be favored in both. But is it important, Maz, for them to finish first? Because if they finish first, then they get New Jersey or that Metropolitan wildcard team versus Toronto. Is that important?
I say yes. I mean, I think it makes all the difference in the world if you can get the wildcard team coming out of that division. So, and you're going to get the lesser of the two if you finish first on top of it. I mean, I suppose that could shake out any number of ways still. But I would absolutely prefer that over Toronto. I want nothing to do with the Maple Leafs. I don't. And again, the other thing is you obviously make the road more difficult for Tampa Bay or Toronto in the process. One of those teams gets bounced right away. Again, we looked it up yesterday. Those three clubs are all in the top seven in the league in points. The Bruins, Tampa, and Toronto. So if you're the Bruins and you can take yourself out of the mix and let those two knock each other off, why wouldn't you do that?
Little Maz worry. I don't care. I think this team's a buzzsaw. I don't care what or who they end up with here. I would rather them rest guys here down the stretch. I mean, it's nice that McAvoy's returning, but there is also a part of me that I don't even like that he's on the ice tonight. Hold him out until next week when the playoffs start. So really, it's about trying to rest these guys, which they're not going to do. Seems like they're going to go for it, but if I had it my way, rest them and, you know, start with whoever the hell you start with next Thursday.
See, the McAvoy thing does tell you a lot. It does. This is the game they picked to bring him back.
Right.
They're going for the kill.
I think they should.
They're going for the kill. That's what they want.
For Maz's reason. Look, if you're going to win the Cup, you should be able to beat Toronto. You shouldn't be afraid of Toronto. But I don't look at it that way. I look at the road. So you're saying you go Toronto, then Tampa. Those are the second and third best team in the East if you're number one. You, Toronto, and Tampa have been the three best teams in the East pretty much all year. And if you face Toronto, that you'd likely have to go through both of them. Is that what you want? Or would you rather just go through one of them? I mean,
one.
It's simple math.
One. And I'm sorry, the playoffs, the NHL playoffs to me, more than any other, you know, tournament, if that's what you want to call it, war of attrition. The way guys get beat up in that thing, we all know what they look like at the end of this thing. Broken legs, punctured lungs, cuts on the face, all kinds of crap that they got to deal with at the end of this thing. It's a good thing it only lasts 25 games because none of them would make it to 30.
Okay, and you know, when you look at it, Jimmy posted an article in our email chain out of Toronto, and Toronto's watching this game and saying, who would we rather have? You know, what does Toronto want for a matchup? And the writer's conclusion was, they'd rather face Tampa than you. And when they broke it down, I mean, there's some things that I didn't realize. The Bruins, for example, are the third stingiest team in the NHL, with only the LA Kings and the Nashville Predators allowing fewer goals per game to this point. For comparison's sake, the Lightning are 13th in goals allowed per game, and the Leafs are 12th. Okay, so those teams are top half in allowing goals, but you're elite. You're third in goals against. You know where you are in goals for?
Fourth.
Tied for third. Goals per game now. Not raw goals, but goals per game. You are tied for third with Toronto. Just 1/10 of a goal behind Winnipeg. Tampa's far and away in first. They've outscored everybody by a crap ton. It's really incredible how much they've scored. But their defense and goaltending is just average. Toronto scores as much as you, but their defense is average compared. There's really only one team that you look at. Maybe there's two, but when you look at just the balance of the teams, it's kind of you and Nashville.
I was going to say Nashville. The Bruins are in the top five in everything. I got it right in front of me here. Goals against, power play, and penalty kill. They're in the top five in all of them.
But if you just want to go goals for, goals against, you know, the Bruins are a top five scoring team and a top three goals against team. No one can say that. In terms of goals against per game, again, Nashville's second. In goals for per game, Nashville's seventh. So no one has your balance. You should go far. I mean, I know this is master of the obvious. Stupid, but you just, We're big on this show in saying that, you know, defense doesn't win championships. Goaltending doesn't win championships. Pitching doesn't win. There's no one thing. Balance. Balance wins championships. Balance. That's what wins championships. I don't know if the Bruins are the best team in the league, but in the regular season, they are the most balanced. And it's really not even close.
See, again, and I include power play and penalty kill.
You know, and you should.
Because the reason I include it is because go back to 2011. Do you remember how wretched their power play was?
Horrible.
It was so bad.
It was historically bad, and then the Kings were even worse when they won the next year.
Right. And so, but the point being is if the Bruins get into a special team series, and Montreal that year was the one to watch because the Canadiens historically are great at the special teams, and they weren't that great in the 5-on-5, at least that year. So you say, okay, well, if you put guys in the box, particularly up in Montreal, the Bruins are going to have a hard time. They can't score. Montreal can. Here you go. But now?
Okay.
Now I think even if you end up playing a special teams game, I think the Bruins are okay.
Give me one more. 5-on-5. Goals. Who's got the best 5-on-5 rating?
You're going to have to give me a minute on that one.
That's another good precursor.
Murray, look that up.
So who's got... It's simply goals...
I'm writing something else. No.
It's goal differential 5-on-5. That's what it is, right? And when the Bruins won the Cup in 2011, they had the best 5-on-5 numbers in the league. And so that's often a precursor. Now, in terms of resting players, Murray, I'm with you. And you know who I think they should start with?
Brad Marchand.
And I'm with Joe Haggerty on this. Joe Haggerty wrote this, and this is coming off of another fine for Brad Marchand, who cross-checks Andrew McDonald, a defenseman in Philadelphia, in the face on Sunday. Okay? Brad Marchand got a $5,000 fine, his ninth, the most in the league. No one else in the league has more fines or suspensions than Brad Marchand, and he added to it. For cross-checking Andrew McDonald in the face... After McDonald kind of hit him from behind along the boards. I went back and watched it. It wasn't that vicious of a shot from McDonald. But Marchand couldn't help himself. This is 24 hours after Marchand punched a Florida Panthers player who was being held up by a Bruin. Now, it was a weird sort of scrum where there was a third man in on Florida that wasn't really called. And the bodies kind of got twisted around a little bit, like they did a little square dance where the partners kind of changed. So Marchand got away with it. But it was close. It was close to Marchand being a third man in or hitting a player who's being held up by another player, which is a game misconduct, and for him, probably a suspension.
And remember what happened at this time last year with this player.
When he, and we're showing it right now, it was Huberdeau and Trocheck, I guess. And Carlo was holding up Trocheck, and Marchand hit him while Carlo was holding up Trocheck. This is usually a match penalty and a suspension or something. But because it was so awkward the way it went down, Trocheck jumped in, and so Marchand didn't get anything. That was Saturday. He got away with it. Then on Sunday, he cross-checks Andrew McDonald in the face, and, you know, you get to the point where you say, well, this guy can't help himself.
Well, and as I mentioned, remember the Jake Jochen spear at this time last year?
Speared him right in the nuggets.
Right before the playoffs, and it's like, what are you doing?
Missed the last two games, could have missed the opening of the postseason, almost lost a playoff position because of it. This guy can't help himself. He's got a problem. He's got an issue.
Habitual line stepper.
He's got an issue. The guy that I compare him to is the Grayson Allen? Grayson Allen guy at Duke who keeps tripping people. I guess he didn't do it this year. Who did Grayson Allen talk to? Who did he get right? Because he couldn't. There was a stretch there where Grayson Allen could not help but stick his foot out like a tick. He's like Tourette's sort of thing. Like he can't control himself.
Well, it's like Draymond Green always trying to kick someone in the Jimmy.
Okay. This is Brad Marchand. And we're getting to the point of the year now where if you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time or you're going to miss time in the playoffs. And each of the last two games, he did things that could have been suspensions. He got away with it. And the thing against Philly on Sunday, I'm sorry. Stupid by Marchand. Stupid. It wasn't that bad of a shot by Andrew McDonald. It wasn't that bad. Wasn't that bad at all. And if everyone's watching you, Brad. Everyone's watching. And the league has got it out for you, man. Big time. The league's got it out for you. As they should. When you've had 9 fines and suspensions, and most players, only 2 other have more than 4, the league has it out for you. Everyone's watching. Everything's recorded. Everything's on tape. They're looking to throw the book at you. And you have to turn around and cross-check the guy in the face? This guy can't help himself. Like, he needs, a sports psychologist. He needs something. And so, if I'm the Bruins, I sit him down and say, cool it. You need to cool it, man.
Kid, what if he doesn't want to?
I don't care if he wants
to. But my point is, couldn't that make it worse? In other words,
better not.
When he comes out for the postseason, if he's pissed off and then does something stupid? Like, are you, I'm just asking.
Yeah.
Do you heighten the chances by agitating him that he'll do something in the first game of the playoffs?
I like the idea of sitting him and showing him those tapes. Play him tonight because you need it. If you win tonight, if you get 2 points, if you win in regulation tonight.
Pretty much over.
For all intents and purposes. It's you're in a really strong spot, and then you can really manage Marshawn. I think you have 3 games left, 2 against Florida, 1 against Ottawa that's packed it in. You should have, on the weekend, some pack-it-in games that you don't need to play them. You play them tonight, and then I say, Brad, we're resting you because we don't want to risk injury, but what I'm really doing is showing him the Andrew McDonald play and the play against Florida, and I'm saying, Brad, cool it. Just cool it. You're going to get rung up because they have it out for you. They're watching you. They're going to treat you differently than any other player, and you're going to get your ass suspended for playoff games. And never mind, as Joe Haggerty rightly points out, Marchand has a little bit of proving to do in the postseason. He's been a spectacular regular season player here for the last several years. He has 1 goal in his last 18 playoff games. Okay, and the most notable one is he was donuts, 0-0-0 stat line in the Stanley Cup Final in 2013. Now, I'm going back 5 years. That's a little unfair, I admit. However, he has not matched his regular season production in the postseason now for a while. So he's got some proving to do in the postseason. He's got to be on the ice in the first place in the postseason, but can he help himself? Can he stop? Can he the impulse control for Brad Marchand, does he have it? And I didn't see it over the weekend. Those are sort of scary plays. They were so unnecessary. So I said, all right, there's your Bruins Minute. Here's an update from Murray. Back with your reaction. This is Brad Marchand, and we're getting to the point of the year now where if you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Half a minute left on this power play, and the Flyers have control of the puck, and then Marchand took down McDonald behind the play. Flyers with the puck, sent over to the far side. Protecting is Laterra. And we've got to stop and play, and the call will be assessed.
It's a retaliation. Marchand was taken into the boards by McDonald, and Marchand wasn't too happy about the way he was taken into the boards. Thought it was a little bit from behind, and he retaliated as McDonald went down to the ice by giving him a shot when he was down.
The league's watching him more than they're watching any other player, and they're going to overreact to him more than any other player. You know what? He's going to get overpunished. And he can't help himself. You see the shot from Andrew McDonald?
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad.
No, I didn't think Marchand's was that bad either, though. Now, look, given his reputation, a fine's a fine. He didn't get suspended. I couldn't care less if he lost $5,000. But they're going to be watching him in the playoffs. And I'll tell you what, if I'm the Bruins, like, if you have this talk.
No, I'm sorry to cut you off, but the fact that Marchand's retaliation wasn't that bad is the whole point. He's going to get it more than anyone else. Another player might not have gotten anything. I mean, it was a penalty. But they wouldn't have heard from the league office, so he's got to know this. You got to control yourself.
So if you're the Bruins, obviously you got to talk to Marchand about it, right? Like, you know, you got to be careful here, et cetera, et cetera. But if I'm the Bruins, I also talk to the league about it, and I'll tell you why. Because if you go to Marchand and say, listen, you can't retaliate, can't do it, because they're going to get you. I mean, in some ways, Neely should know this better than anybody. Neely used to get called for retaliation all the time. Not that he had the dirty reputation that Marchand has, but in terms of being able to control yourself, it's the same discipline that they're trying to drill into this guy's head. But you got to tell the league, look, if we're telling them not to retaliate, if someone does something that's worthy of a penalty, you can't just let them beat the crap out of the guy either.
Okay, to your thoughts, Bruins, Patriots, we did the Kawhi Leonard stuff, rumors to the Celtics on the board as well. We started Red Sox. We've got J.D. Martinez playing, but Jackie Bradley in the lineup and Mookie Betts not. How do you feel about that? All on the table. Craig in Stockbridge, though, on the B's here. Go ahead, Craig.
Yes, sir. Thanks, guys. I appreciate taking my call. The thing is about the whole situation with Marchand. Mark Recchi took care of him. Then there was Sean Thornton. And they're taking care of themselves, and I think they got to run for the cup, and Maz is going to be the grand marshal for the parade.
Okay, I don't like your call. I don't get what you're talking about.
Me neither.
About the grand marshal for the parade. Is he saying that Marchand needs a protector? Marchand needs someone to pull him aside and say, Brad,
cut the crap.
They're watching you. And like, but it's to the point. Well, I mean, he said it a million. He's been fined and suspended a million times, and he said it every time. He said, "I got to be smarter. I got to be smarter. I got to be." So he, like, what the just saying it to him isn't going to do anything. It's got to be. What did they do with Grayson Allen? How did the folks in Duke get Grayson Allen to stop sticking his foot out? Sean and Marble, do you have an answer for me on that?
So he's actually not cured. So I don't watch a lot of college basketball, but I swear the only 5 minutes of college basketball I watched this year, Grayson Allen was running up the court, and he somehow stuck his hindside backwards, and he basically hip-checked someone trying to draw the foul, and they gave Grayson Allen a technical. So he's still doing it. He's just doing it differently.
So, I mean, all right, so maybe he's not cured. I don't know. If Marchand keeps pulling it, he's going to get suspended in the playoffs. Yep, he is, and that's going to cost you big time. So the fact that he's still doing it at this point, to me, is mind-blowing.
I mean, given the nature of postseason games, if you had to bet right now that he makes it through or doesn't make it through the playoffs, what would you pick?
My money's against.
Me too.
This weekend, he couldn't control himself.
I mean, at some point here, he's going to get popped.
Matthew in Framingham on the Patriots and Bill Belichick, your thoughts? Matthew!
Yeah, right here. Hey, so 2 weeks ago I called. I talked about a mutiny, a coup, the Patriots, a coup. And you guys laughed me off the air, except for Murray. And now it's come full circle, and that's exactly what's going on if you really look at it. Basically, they took away, Brady made sure to take away his future quarterback, did that. Now they got McDaniels in place. They got a replacement in place if needed, all right? And now he's teamed up with Gronk. And they all, and this whole thing, Brady has the backing of the owner. The owner's going to back him no matter what. And Belichick, he's lost the fans after the Super Bowl. He says, do your job, no days off. Well, guess what? He didn't do his job. Brady did his job. He gave Butler a day off on the worst day off possible. So it's a mutiny against Belichick. And if Belichick sets that hard line, like you say, I'm telling you, he's going to side with Brady. So either he's going to swallow it or leave.
Okay. I mean, it all sounds very dramatic, but, I mean, Brady and Gronk are in cahoots. I mean, I think it's sort of obvious.
Feels that way.
They're taking the same approach, and they're ganging up, and they're leveraging.
I mean, what they're saying something is almost exactly the same. Of course they're, you know, trying to have the coup or the cue right up the keister of Belichick.
The cue. It's a cue.
Not the pull cue. But they Brady and Gronk are sort of leveraging Belichick together. They meaning Brady, was a huge factor in getting Josh back. As Greg Bedard or others have said, McDaniels has become a buffer between him and Bill. What's really important for Brady, that Josh to stay there. And, oh, by the way, it's Belichick's replacement. So they get Josh back. When it came time to make the call between Brady or Garoppolo, Kraft steps in and sides with Brady. The fans are all pissed at Bill because of the way that Super Bowl turned out. And it's sort of, like, it sounds dramatic to say that it's a cue, but it's something like it.
That's what I've been saying for a while. I think this thing is in play here. Give us what we want or we're going to walk. We're going to retire.
Yeah, it's a cue d'etat.
Meanwhile, Blaze.
I mean, it's stunning, though, that it's come to this.
Called a flat-out coup is strong, but there's definitely leveraging going on. There's definitely sides drawn, and it's sort of playing out. We don't see it all, but we see enough of it to it's sort of obvious.
I mean, it is stunning to me that Belichick and Brady have ended up at this, like, you know, digging their feet in to see who's going to give up the ground. Like,
who's got to give it up?
Brady and Gronk. They have to. Because if Bill gives in here, what's the point of even coaching the team?
Exactly.
The other two.
those two players know.
I see your point, Martin. I see your point. But, like, there's no point. If Brady and Gronk win, Bill's done. He's done in terms of the power, your leverage he has with his team.
And this is what those two players know. This is why the coup d'etat is on the table. Yeah.
Long commercial-free segment is next, again, including a whopper of a Celtics rumor.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Realistically, where can you see him going that's a better situation with the potential to win year in and year out?
You're going to like this. The Boston Celtics.
Whoa.
Here's why. Just think about this now. They have the assets.
Right.
They developed Jaylen Brown. They developed Tatum. I've talked about this all year. In order for them to take the next step, they need another all-star. They're going to lose one of those players to acquire them. They're going to probably lose Rozier and or Smart. You probably got to lose Horford for his salary. Well, Kawhi Leonard with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving in the Eastern Conference.
Jalen Rose on ESPN talking about Kawhi Leonard to the Celtics. Our very own James in Brighton also, again, who's not so sneaky Celtic sources anymore. It's not so sneaky. Jimmy Stewart's pretty much dead on when it comes to the Celtics. And when he says things like, I believe, you got to take it seriously. And he said today that from what I believe, the Celtics have already called the Spurs on Kawhi Leonard, and the ask from San Antonio centered around Jaylen Brown and four future first-round picks. Now, Stewart says, I'd be shocked if Leonard got that much for a return. The recent history of a star player being dealt shows the horse never gets a horse for a return. Like the Chris Paul trade, the Paul George trade, the Jimmy Butler trade, they all felt like they were thefts on the part of the team, on the part of the team getting that big player. So Jimmy thinks it's less than Jaylen Brown and four firsts. But let's just call it Jaylen Brown and a single first. It's called Jaylen Brown and that Sacramento pick. That could be a top five next year. Although it can't be number one because it's number one protected. But it could be a lottery pick if Sacramento once again tanks. Jaylen Brown and that pick for Kawhi Leonard.
No.
I'm leaning no.
I don't even think you, by the way, just because this has happened a couple of times, you can't reference the Paul George trade as a steal anymore because Victor Oladipo was a stud. Like, that worked out for Indiana. That dude's a stud.
At the time, though, we were all mocking it.
I thought it was an insane deal.
Yeah, we all did. We were all wrong. And so I think we're all ultimately going to be all wrong if we ended up trading Jaylen Brown because Jaylen Brown's going to be this guy in a few years.
See, but I think there's a similarity there between the players. So that's why I say Jaylen Brown is... I'm not giving up much more. You want it straight up?
Jaylen Brown and the Sacramento pick.
No.
No, not the Sacramento pick, no.
Okay, the Clippers pick, that's next year or the year after, top 15 protected.
Sure, I'm in.
Okay, mid-first round pick and Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard.
Yep, I'm in.
Okay. Now, I'm still going under the assumption that still uses up all your bullets for Anthony Davis. That's it, you're done. Your team is now Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Kawhi Leonard, Al Horford, Jason Tatum. Is that good enough to win a championship?
Pretty close. Pretty close. I told you, again, if you build a position this team, and effectively, that's what is, because we all know Al Horford's another forward, right? Even though he's not your traditional wing player, per se, you've effectively got five guys that can play on the perimeter.
Okay, so that's item number one on the Celtics that we hit on today. You do that? If that's it, is that your final move? And if it is, how do you feel about that, if that's your team? You okay with that?
No.
Okay, Murray's a no, Maz is a yes. I'm a yes. I mean, ideally, Jaylen Brown is Kawhi Leonard. Why not get the guy that you know is that guy?
Well, because Jaylen Brown isn't a selfish baby who shut it down on the best coach in the league.
But he might be in time. It's the NBA. It's hard to... Beggars can't be choosers, man. How many truly, truly high character guys are there in sports? Never mind the NBA. So, look, the Celtics sure don't care. Dennis Johnson was the biggest a-hole you could imagine. Shot his way out of Seattle. They just fine coming here.
That's the Patriots of the NBA, though. This is why this story is... I think this story is underplayed. When you have guys that are consummate professionals in that league, like Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker, going to this guy and being like, dude, we need your help. We know you're fine. Come back. And he won't come back. What is Greg Popovich all of a sudden, who has been lauded as the greatest coach in the NBA for almost 20 years now? He's a complete a-hole, and Kawhi Leonard's right here? He's a selfish baby. I want no part of this guy.
Okay, discuss. The other thing we hit on was Celtics in Milwaukee tonight, in Toronto tomorrow. They still have a chance at the number one seed, which I find important to be home, you know, game seven at home of the Eastern Conference Finals. I want that. But what I really want to consider is when you get Cleveland. And, you know, again, the way the seedings go, one play four, two plays three in the second round. And it almost always shakes out that way in the NBA, right? It's just always one versus four, two versus three. Right now, you're the two, Cleveland's the three. But Cleveland's just a half game ahead of Philly in 3-4, and you're two games behind Toronto, playing at Toronto tomorrow night for the 1-2. So it's all very fluid. It could all shake out. Is it more important for you to have game seven at home in the Eastern Finals and be the number one seed, and no matter where Cleveland lands? Or do you want to try and push Cleveland off to the conference finals? Because in the second round, you'll just be getting Kyrie back, ideally. You'll just be getting Marcus Smart back, ideally. Maybe one or both won't quite be ready. They'll be rusty. They'll still need to get in condition. Maybe they're pushing the way back for that series, and it's not ideal. You want Kyrie and Marcus Smart to have another warm-up series before they get to Cleveland. How important is it to Kyrie to face LeBron James? You got to think it's super important. And how important is it to LeBron James to beat Kyrie Irving? This is courtesy of our very own Stephen A. Smith. I say our very own, our favorite Stephen A. Smith.
There is no greater negative that can happen to LeBron James this year than losing to Kyrie Irving.
This is why
I said Cleveland's coming out of the East. LeBron James cannot lose to Kyrie Irving this year. I ain't talking about next year. When Gordon Hayward comes.
I'm not talking
about when we look at the future of Boston. This year, without Gordon Hayward, if the Boston Celtics, and I'm not, let me tell you something right now. This is how bad this is. LeBron would lose to somebody else. Lose to the Wizards in the first round.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah.
Lose to Toronto. It wouldn't be as bad. If LeBron James loses to Kyrie Irving, oh, he won't live that down. He won't live
that day.
He can, and I don't.
Are they going to win or lose? Yeah.
They are not losing to Boston.
See, Molly.
They are not losing to Boston. I believe of all the years that LeBron James has been in this league, this is the closest we will ever see to him being Jordan-esque in a series against Boston and
right
Kyrie
now.
Irving.
Okay.
Because all he has to.
I'm telling
he
you right now.
Right now. I'm it, trying to tell you.
Okay, so. I just like listening to Stephen A. sometimes, and that's one of those times.
He's right. The idea, LeBron, you're telling me LeBron wouldn't get geeked up for that series and say, I'm not losing to this
please.
Guy.
And I think Kyrie's got the same mindset. It's not about you. You know, I'm going to prove it's not about you.
Tell you what, though, don't you think in a lot of ways it means more for LeBron? I mean, this is it, right? He's out of Cleveland. He's not staying there, I don't think. And so what's he going to do? He's going to lose to Kyrie and then leave Cleveland and say, not only did I lose to the guy, but I screwed you over and forced him out of town on top of it? Like, that's a scary proposition seeing LeBron in that game. And by the way, I think that that's why he's going to play 82. He's going to play all 82 games because he doesn't want the Cavs or their fans holding it over his head that he didn't try in his last year.
Okay, we have those two items on the Celtics. We've got the Red Sox, notable lineup issue tonight. J.D. Martinez has to play the outfield. He wants to play the outfield. It's a National League park, so he can't DH him anyway. So he's in, fine. But Mookie Betts is out, and Jackie Bradley remains in the lineup. Jackie Bradley, who is 1-for-12 this year, hitting .083, is a career .239 hitter. I don't need to tell you that Jackie Bradley sucks offensively, except for 1 or 2 months a year. He stays in. Mookie Betts, who just, what, 2 hits and a home run last night?
And they were both hard hit.
Comes out. How do you feel about that? Why does Jackie Bradley stay in the lineup? If Martinez needs to get into the outfield, why is Bradley not the designated guy that comes out every single time? Benintendi is now sat for Martinez, and now Betts is sat for Martinez. Why isn't that Bradley every single time? That's the Red Sox item, and Gronkowski, that ball remains in the air. And I think the interesting way to look at it today is, what does Bill do about it? What does Bill do about it?
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.